You know, I did a sub-I here, and part of the reason I wanted to match at Wisconsin was because I felt like the resident camaraderie was like something I hadn't really witnessed at other programs I had rotated through. For me personally, I think that is one of the most important factors in being able to survive your residency is enjoying the people you work with and getting along with them.
Hello and welcome to our Winovations webinar turn podcast series. I'm your host, Dr. Kyle A. Richards, and we have a really phenomenal program planned for today. Now, the purpose of these podcasts is to highlight the exciting and innovative work being done at the University of Wisconsin in the Department of Urology. We also want to generate a discussion within the broader urology community so that we can continue to work together to make some really exciting and innovative advancements in urologic care. Now, we are planning future podcasts with other guests from our department and maybe even beyond our department, so stay tuned for these releases. We will be winding down season one in the next few months. Also, something new this month that we're going to be rolling out a urology joke of the month. So stay tuned for that. That will be at the end of the program. So you're going to have to listen to our entire discussion. So I hope you don't just fast forward to the end to hear the urology joke of the month, but you won't want to miss that. So with no further ado, I'm really excited to have my guest today, Dr. Jordan Krieger. Dr. Krieger is the first resident to be on our Winovations podcast series, and she's one of our current chief residents in our Department of Urology. So this is really exciting for me to have her on the program. A little bit about Jordan. She did her undergraduate training at the University of Texas, Austin, where she studied film. She decided that medicine was her true calling and that she didn't want to live in a van in LA. So she went on to medical school at the Baylor College of Medicine. And she joined us here about 5 years ago. She'll be wrapping up her residency in urology in really, I think, less than 2 months now. And heading to Austin, Texas, where she'll be joining a private practice group. I'm thrilled to have her on. We're going to discuss innovative approaches to resident education. So Jordan, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Yeah, when we started thinking about the podcast and the webinar from the beginning, I was very hopeful that we'd be able to have a resident on and one of our trainees. So this is sort of that plan coming to fruition. And how does it feel now that you're near the end of your medical and surgical training?
It's definitely very bittersweet. I think when you start out your intern year, you take for granted how much the time is going to fly. It's crazy to look back on my first day of being an intern, which I actually remember very clearly in my mind because I couldn't even order labs at the time. And just thinking about how lost and scared I was that first day. And I look at myself now and I think about how far I've come. And so it's, of course, a little bit sad, you know, having been here for 5 years, this is for a lot of residents who are in surgical training programs, the most they've spent in one place, you know, one area of the country for this extended period of time, because we're so used to going to school and then going to school and then going to school. So it's definitely a little bit sad and a little bit scary, but I'm very excited to move on to the next phase of my life.
Yeah, I still vividly remember the last day of my residency, and that was about, I finished residency in 2012. So 11 years ago, I remember walking out the door that last time. And yeah, a lot of emotions going through. I mean, it's quite an accomplishment to get to that point. But yeah, it's a little sad. It's a little scary. So I remember those. I remember that day very well.
I know, I feel the need to leave my mark somewhere. I might have to sign something before I go in the resident room.
Yeah, you know, and you know, the thing is I think as attendings too, we spend so much time with the residents that you know, I still think of all the trainees that have come through here. So you definitely won't be forgotten.
Well, thank you.
All right. So enough of the sort of touchy-feely stuff, though. We got to talk a little bit more about sort of residency training and what it's like at Wisconsin and maybe more globally, just, you know, because there are certainly some folks that might listen to this podcast that are not urologists. But what are some of the challenges of urology residency training?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is how versatile our surgical specialty is. You know, not only do we have to learn open surgery like a lot of other specialties do, we also have to learn robotics and we have to learn endoscopy. And those are three major and very different skill sets that in and of themselves take a really long time to master. And a urology residency asks of its trainees that they become proficient in all three of those categories of surgery. So I think as a junior resident, especially, that can feel extremely daunting and overwhelming and like a seemingly impossible task. But as you grow and progress and you start to look back on your training, you realize you are getting the hang of things, that you are becoming proficient in all three of those different types of surgeries. And then that can feel very rewarding to sort of look back and think, wow, I can do all three of these things and pretty well. So I think that certainly can be one of the hardest aspects of urology specifically, is just having to sort of wrap your brain around those three different areas that require very different technical skill sets.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, we as attendings, we want our residents to become the sort of triple threat, you know, open, robotic, endoscopically. It's a pretty steep learning curve. And it's so rewarding, though, when I see all the chief residents finishing up here and, mastering those skills. It really just makes my job as an attending worthwhile and very fulfilling. So it's great to witness that. So one of the other big ticket items, I think, in all of medicine is sort of the concept of burnout and well-being of providers. Over the past decade, we've become more and more aware of the importance of provider well-being, not just the physicians, but the residents, the fellows, the medical students, and the rest of the staff. But are there some things that the department or the institution here at University of Wisconsin has implemented to help support well-being of the residents? Some things that maybe are a little bit more cutting edge or innovative?
Yeah, definitely. One of the things we recently implemented, actually about halfway through my training here, it was our night float system, which I think has made a huge difference just in terms of resident level fatigue. So in the past, what we would do, and I think which is pretty common in a lot of programs, is that, as a resident, you take home call, but you are taking potentially 24-hour call. You work through the night, you still have your float system where we just have one person who takes call overnight and kind of manages the floor and the consults. And then that way everyone else who's on service can prepare for their cases, watch video, study, whatever they want to do, sleep in preparation of potentially really big OR day. And, I personally never partook in that night float system because I was already a senior resident by the time we implemented it. But from what the junior residents have said, it has made a world of difference just in their burnout levels, because they're just not as tired as they used to be. So I think that was something that we're really proud of having implemented here. And, not just from a fatigue standpoint, that means the night float resident is the one who gets a lot of the times, a lot of the disasters we see happen in the middle of the night. So that means that's one resident getting to see all of those emergencies night to night to night. And so in some ways they're getting a better experience as well. So I think that's been huge. The program's also very supportive and good about making sure all residents can get to any doctor's appointments they need to, dentist appointments. As a resident cohort, we are happy to cover for each other, so those kinds of things can happen. The University of Wisconsin as a whole makes it very easy if, someone ever wanted to talk to a mental health professional, those resources are made very available to us so that we can easily access that if we need to. One of the other things I'm really proud of at our urology residency program is how flexible our vacation is. I think it's really easy for program coordinators and program directors to say, this is your 2 weeks of vacation and that's what you get and you have to deal with it, because that's, arguably exceedingly easier to coordinate. But MUSL specifically is really fantastic about working with us to make sure that we can go to as many, weddings, major life events as we want to go to, because we can kind of pick and choose when our vacation is. And I think that contributes a lot to our ability to not burn out, because it's really easy to feel like you're on an island when you're in residency and feel out of touch with your loved ones and your family. So even just being able to go home for a long weekend to go meet your new niece or nephew, for example, I think that goes a long way.
Yeah, I think that That's great to hear. And I just want to just unpack a little bit of what you said there. First off, Denise Musel, our program coordinator that you referenced, she's amazing, right? I mean, she's our program coordinator. And I think without having an outstanding, dedicated, committed program coordinator, the residency program, I think, suffers tremendously. So she's been fantastic, having worked with her in that capacity. And then Dan Williams, I want to give him a shout out as well. He's our program director, has been our program director for about a decade now, and has really, I think, helped to sort of drive a lot of these initiatives forward. You were touching a little bit on camaraderie amongst the residents. I know that that's not really maybe a novel concept, but you hear of certain resident programs where, you know, the residents maybe aren't, they don't all get along very well, and they're fighting for cases. And you had mentioned that your co-residents are covering for each other, helping, you know, if you need to go to the dentist or go see your doctor. So that's something that you think is maybe unique to Wisconsin, or something that you've experienced as a resident here?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I certainly hope it's not unique to us, and I hope a lot of other programs have similar camaraderie. But I will say, you know, I did a sub-I here, and part of the reason I wanted to match at Wisconsin was because I felt like the resident camaraderie was like something I hadn't really witnessed at other programs I had rotated through. For me personally, I think that is one of the most important factors in being able to survive your residency, is enjoying the people you work with and getting along with them. And that's not to say that, you know, obviously there are a lot of different personalities going into surgery, and not all of them are going to mesh perfectly all the time. It doesn't mean that you have to be best friends outside of work, but I think specifically at Wisconsin, we just have a really good sense of team effort and teamwork, even amongst different personalities. You know, all of my coworkers, I love working with dearly, and we all get along really well and all look out for each other. And I think one of the things that I started to realize, certainly as I became a rising chief, is just reminding myself to remember what it's like to be a junior resident and what things stress you out and what makes work really hard. Because then I think as a leader, it allows you to make decisions based on the team as a whole and not just make decisions based on your own self-interests. And I think that kind of mindset allows the team to bond better together, to help each other out, to get all of the work done as a unit. And so that way everyone can kind of get back to their personal lives faster, rather than saying, well, my job's done for the day, so I'm going to go home. That's not how we work here. We're very team oriented. And I think that makes a huge difference in everyone's happiness.
Yeah, that's well said. And what you're getting at is that sort of part of the culture within the department. It kind of permeates down through the residents, through the faculty. And very well said, Dr. Krieger. I wanted to just circle back a little bit to the night float. You know, that's something that really many programs around the country are either moving in that direction or have moved in that direction. I know I've talked to some program directors around the country where there's sort of some pushback in moving in that direction, either from the residents or from the faculty. Do you see many drawbacks to the night float system, or is it really something that you think is paramount to resident wellness moving forward at most programs in 2023?
I definitely think it should become paramount. I think it's been pretty helpful in terms of not just, you know, meeting work hour requirements, which have become much more important in 2023 than they were in 1980. So I think that factor plays a role a lot. The downside, I will say, is that it certainly can be very isolating. You know, the way we do it here, you're kind of alone in our workroom for 2 months at a time. And that can obviously get really lonely. Certainly there are some, you know, just downsides to living a life where you're, you know, awake when everyone else is asleep. Can probably, you know, feel a little socially isolating. But kind of going back to the camaraderie we were talking about earlier, we sort of make a point to have pizza parties when we can for our night float resident, especially when they're, you know, rounding the end of their rotation. I know I've personally witnessed our junior residents sticking around late to just socialize with the night float intern and eat dinner together, which I think is really sweet and kind of a big testament to them supporting each other, because it can be really hard to, you know, be by yourself on night float. But I do think that the benefits certainly sort of outweigh some of those drawbacks, and it almost becomes like a rite of passage, like, okay, I'm done with the night float, yay, I can move on. And kind of keep going with things.
I think for people tuning in, hopefully that are thinking about transitioning to night floats, we did it here at Wisconsin. The residents tell us that it was a good thing for their wellness, and our program has, I think, continued to flourish through those changes, which, you know, can be scary anytime you're changing sort of structure of things. All right, so just switching gears a little bit or digging a little bit deeper into maybe some of the unique or innovative aspects of the urology residency training program here at University of Wisconsin. Can you roll through some of the unique aspects of the training program here that are somewhat novel or innovative?
Yeah, definitely. I'll start out with our simulation program, which has been pretty great. We have a robot simulator that I think is very nice, especially as an intern, before you start getting on the console as a junior resident, just to learn sort of the mechanics of the robot, how to move the arms, how to move the camera. Those are all very basic steps that you have to really master before you can sit down and, you know, do it for real on a patient. So just having sort of unlimited time and ability to go use that whenever you have downtime is really nice in the beginning of your training. We also, within our simulation program, kind of have some nice models for other things like endoscopy and PCNL, and we have a TURP simulator we've used before. I know they're working on some HoLEP simulation stuff. So we have a lot of cool things that are nice for just sort of learning the equipment, learning how to move things, and definitely helps get you ready for the real deal.
So the simulation program, that is something that we have in our department that has some set modules then, or is it basically resident driven? How does that work?
Yeah, there's set modules that are developed for each PGY class. And as you move on in your training, you know, it's time for X module and you learn that and you go as a group and work on it together. And then you continue to progress up till, you know, you're ready to be doing it for real. So it's very structured, which is nice and kind of gives a nice plan for the residents to move through.
Yeah, I know Dr. Best is the director, the simulation program director for our department simulation program. And what I've seen as a faculty member is it seems to be very structured. There's didactics, there's hands-on components. There's a intern boot camp, so the interns can learn how to, you know, have a structured time to learn how to do some of the more basic operative skills that are essential. So yeah, so that's our simulation program. I think it's continued to grow as far as I could tell. There's a simulation committee in the department, and there's a support staff also for the residents. Do the residents get any protected time for education or didactics, or are their pagers kind of going off during, you know, grand rounds and they're running to the ER, you know, in the middle of their lectures?
Yeah, no, that's definitely another really nice thing we have here at Wisconsin, is that our Wednesday mornings are protected, including the pager. So in theory, although you know how things go at the VA sometimes with the paging system, in theory, someone is covering the pagers at all times in our Wednesday block time where we go to grand rounds, we have a conference, we usually have some kind of learning session, potentially with, you know, one-on-one time with one of our attendings kind of talking us through a topic or a surgical skill. And sometimes, you know, that time is also super useful just for us as residents to be able to talk about things within the program logistically that we need to figure out, like, you know, how are things going with our roadshow cart, or who's going to be covering for the people who are gone for national meetings, or if someone's on research. So just having, you know, even an hour to sit down as a resident cohort with, you know, with protected time, be able to talk about some of these silly logistical things you have to figure out as residents is super helpful, you know, and not having to constantly be returning pages about glucose checks or whatever it is.
Yeah, usually the VA just calls me, but apparently not always. So
yeah.
Yeah, that's nice, though. I think that's something that is not necessarily universal. It certainly wasn't, you know, where I trained, you know, we had sort of didactic time, but it certainly wasn't necessarily very, very protected. So during the grand rounds and the didactic time, then Jordan, who's taking the first call then? Does it go to one of the APPs, or is it an attending, or who's fielding those calls?
Yeah. So speaking of APPs, that's actually a great segue into another one of the huge benefits we have here, which is that we have an inpatient floor APP named Andrea Christensen, who is fantastic. We definitely could not survive without everything she does for us. And so on Wednesday morning, she holds the pager, including the consult pager, and speaks directly to whichever staff is on call for any types of emergencies that might be happening. And then we have another great APP Meritor named Ann Walsh, who covers for us over there, and some great VA APPs as well, who can kind of help answer any first call pages. So yes, they are all super critical to our happiness and our well-being as residents. You know, both with what they do for us on the floor, in terms of just, you know, dealing with things like the social work stuff that none of us want to deal with or have time to deal with, discharging people, sitting down and talking to the patients, they bedside for us, which is also huge. So yeah, they have been super essential. And we're very grateful as residents to have them.
Yeah, I think that's well said. You know, even as faculty, we rely a lot on APPs to bridge some of those gaps. And I think our residency program, like you mentioned, has done a really nice job of incorporating APPs to help with, you know, resident wellness, both on the floor and in the operating room. We're actually trying to grow the OR experience of our APPs so that the residents can help us with robotic surgery, help us at the bedside. So we're definitely working to continue to grow that experience so that the residents won't have to bedside quite as much moving forward. Moving on a little bit, Jordan, into sort of mentorship. I know that's an important thing for us in medicine, you know, throughout. How does the department sort of handle mentorship regarding the trainees?
Yeah, we fortunately have sort of the benefit of having both formal mentorship and informal mentorship. So when you're a brand new intern, you know, obviously things change as you go through residency and interests change, but our program makes a point to ask, you know, what aspect of urology you might be interested in as an intern. And if you have some idea of, you know, I think I want to do oncology or I think I want to do reconstruction, then they'll try to formally assign you a mentor who might be appropriate for that interest to help you with potential fellowship applications, potential research. And that person is responsible for meeting with you at least, I think it's twice a year, so to just check in on you. And it's nice to just have, you know, someone specific just saying, you know, how are you doing and how is residency going and are you handling it okay and what do you need help with, if, you know, whether that be job search or fellowship applications or whatever. And, you know, certainly, you know, like I mentioned, sometimes what you want to do changes and what you wanted to do intern year is very different than what you decide you want to go into. And so all of our faculty in that regard are very great about being informal mentors too, especially if your interests have shifted. You still have your formal mentor to check in on you and help you with things, but you can touch base really with any faculty whose specialty you might be interested in. And everyone's super gracious and happy to, you know, connect you with people around the country that they might know who are working in an area you might want to work, for example.
Yeah, I think having both formal and informal mentorship is sort of a unique model. A lot of places it's more informal than formal. You know, it's sort of like, you know, you'll figure it out, you'll find a mentor, you know, when you need one, if you need one. I mean, to be honest, we all need mentors, you know, at various points in our careers, and residency is, I would say, your formative years where you really need that direction. And like you said, I mean, the department here has really formalized that process. I wanted to also ask you a little bit about some of the unique rotations that the residents have the opportunity to work on in the different services. I wanted to highlight a few of them. The first, I think, is kind of unique is the VA experience. We have a veterans hospital affiliated with our university hospital. I know many university hospitals are affiliated with VA hospitals. But what are some of the unique aspects of that experience for you, Jordan, during your training? And, you know, can you talk a little bit about that experience and maybe what it's meant to you? Now, for full disclosure, as you may know, I'm the chief of urology at the VA. I want you to speak freely, though.
Gun to my head. No, just kidding. The VA, I actually, when I was looking for residency programs, I very specifically wanted to end up at a place with a VA where I went to med school at Baylor. They had a really robust VA experience there as well. And just from talking to the residents when I was a med student, I could tell that it was a great learning opportunity for a lot of reasons. I think the first reason is that the clinics at the VA are your clinics. So it's really your first window into what it's going to be like to be an attending by yourself one day, having to run a clinic, the constant phone calls from patients, having to make decisions about how to follow people, how to make decisions about when to operate on people. I think that's kind of a huge skill you learn as a resident at the VA, is who's a good surgical candidate and should I operate on them or not. So that's super important. It's also the first place really that you learn how to do procedures at our program. So that's where you start getting experience with cystoing people. You start learning how to do prostate biopsies, which are obviously all very important skills as a urologist. And it's a great operative experience too. You sort of start out as a junior resident learning from your senior resident, which is really nice. We do a lot of sort of senior resident teaching, especially on our VA rotation, for specifically with our endoscopic procedures. And so as a fourth year, you're learning how to teach someone how to do something for the first time. And I think you realize that you've really mastered a surgery when you're able to teach someone else how to do it. Or you start to realize how frustrating it can be for your attendings to teach you how to do something, which I think is also fair. So yeah, the VA experience was very critical, I think, to me becoming the urologist I am today and learning how to do a lot. So I'm very grateful for it.
That's great to hear, Jordan. The other thing I'll just put a plug in for is that our VA, from a wellness standpoint, and also somewhat unique, is physically connected to the university hospital. A lot of places you have to get in a car and drive to the VA. It may not be in necessarily close proximity to the main campus. So it's part of our main campus, which just helps, you know, with resident wellness, and it's easy to get to. And the patients too are just a great group of men and women, and you feel good taking care of them.
For sure. Agree.
Now the other rotation I wanted to highlight is the peds experience, because I know that rotation has changed. Dr. Farhat joined us a few years ago and has rebuilt that program with Dr. Cannon and Dr. Bhatia. Dr. Su is our holdover. So how has that experience changed, and what's sort of unique about that you want to share with all our listeners out there?
Yeah, I think one of the things I really love about our peds program is that we rotate it through it as for the first time as second years. And I think some of the skills you learn on peds are super critical to sort of learning the basics of operating. You do a ton of suturing. You learn how to use your loops for the first time, which I still remember the first day I used my loops and how dizzy and just disoriented I felt afterwards. Like, that's actually kind of a hard skill to figure out, is how to operate with loops. And you're constantly using it on pediatrics, obviously. So I think just sort of all of those basic skills come in handy down the road as you start to operate on adults more. You mentioned Dr. Farhat. I was actually the very first resident who ever got to operate with Dr. Farhat. And I think he's been hugely critical to the success of our peds program. You know, he came from a very high volume center in Canada, and he has a lot of big dreams for how much he wants to grow the pediatric department. And already I've seen them, you know, do some pretty major surgeries. Dr. Sue's been amazing and been here for a long time too. She's always such a pleasure to operate with. And then, you know, when they hire Drs. Bhatia and Cannon, you can really see the department growing and all of the efforts they've been making to expand the program and a lot of the cool, you know, surgeries we've done. I think they've, you know, since I have rotated off, I think they now have a sedation clinic where they can do smaller procedures in a sedation setting rather than having to take these kids to the OR. So that's been super nice too. So yeah, it's definitely very critical, and you know, a lot of the skills I feel like I've learned and been able to apply on my adult rotations.
Now that our residency program has expanded, or is in the process of expanding, the residents have some experience on the PED service as senior residents now as well? Or it's not just a junior resident rotation?
Right, yeah. With Dr. Farhat coming in and expanding the program to have more attendings, one of the things we thought that would be really nice would be to go back and as a hybrid rotation. So when we're on our admin rotation, we're also considered the pediatric chief. And the intention of that was because when they do these major cases, you're obviously going to go back with different eyes as a senior resident than you would as a second year who, you know, probably hasn't had much experience on the robot yet. So any of the major robotic cases they do will come to, which is really nice because obviously as chiefs, we know what we're doing on the robot instead of barely knowing how to dock it. And so those cases can be super nice and helpful, the pyeloplasties and some of the fun stuff they're doing over there. So we come back as Chiefs now.
That's great. Yeah. Kudos to the Peds team for really getting that rotation built up. And I think it's been a unique and great experience for our residents. A couple more topics I wanted to touch on. The next is the robotics experience. So robotics in surgery is obviously exciting. It's novel. It can be, you know, used for innovative ways of dealing with surgical problems. And that's something that our residents get exposed to pretty much from day one. It's somewhat ubiquitous. So what's been your robotics experience here at UW? And what role maybe does simulation? You talked a little bit about the robotic simulator earlier, but I guess how has the robotics program impacted your residency training?
It's interesting because I think the robotics program has changed a lot from even when I was an intern to now, you know, now being a graduating chief. I've been able to see some of the really nice additions the program has been able to implement. I think what we do a really good job of is our stepwise approach to advancing through the different phases of the procedure. And so, you know, most people will start you out kind of with dropping the bladder. And so the first time you might do that is probably at the VA as a second year resident, or if, you know, you and Dr. Shapiro both do a posterior approach, so it might be that you're working on the posterior approach for the first time as a young junior resident. And then as you progress along through the surgeries, you're starting to do more complicated steps, such as lymph nodes or the anastomosis. And so there's a good rise in it and the difficulty or the complexity of the steps you're doing. And one of the things that is really nice that we have here is the fact that we have dual consoles. Like, I remember when I was still a junior resident, we still had a lot of SIs before we started getting all of the XIs into the hospitals. And so there usually was one console. And so you can imagine, even if the attending, you know, wanted to let the resident on the console more, that slows things down quite significantly if there's one console that you're having to get up and stay, you know, switch back and forth. And if you're short like me, then that means you have to adjust the ergonomics, and then that wastes time. So the fact that we have XIs ubiquitously in all of our hospitals, and that there's two consoles in all of the hospitals, means that the attendings don't have to worry about wasting time, you know, switching off back and forth on one console. And so that has really helped facilitate resident teaching. And then the other thing that we've implemented that has been really nice is that the program has been very receptive to the fact that we as residents asked for more frequent bedside assistance. It obviously makes a huge difference if you don't have to scrub back in and out and in and out to bedside. And so they've, you know, worked hard to find us APPs who can help with that in the OR. And that gives us more time on the console as well. I know, you know, obviously, Dr. Richards, one of the things that you feel very strongly about that we've appreciated is that no one is too good to bedside. So I know, you know, if you have one resident, then you as an attending and other attendings do this as well, will scrub in and bedside for us, which we really appreciate. So I think that's been a big step moving forward, and something we're continuing to try to improve is just having that more frequent bedside presence so that it allows the attendings to be able to go back and forth with us on the robot more.
Yeah, that's well said. And I think the dual console, now that we've, you know, it's throughout this our system, we take for granted. But yeah, I remember not long ago when we didn't have dual console. And so that training console has really, I think it's essential. If you're at a training program, you know, you've got residents, fellows, you need to have a dual console. And I'm very happy that we have dual consoles basically with all of our systems now. Along the same theme as robotics, I know you and some of the other residents have been talking about a robotics passport. And can you just touch on that and what that means, this robotics passport idea?
Definitely. Thank you for bringing it up. We kind of sat down as a resident group and just talked about, you know, what are ways that we can formalize a robotics curriculum of some kind? Or is there some way to sort of better measure how we are improving in our robotic skills as we move throughout residency? Because, you know, I think one of the things I had thought about is, you know, I mentioned what we're really good at is progressing residents through harder and harder steps. But sort of what partially sparked this when we were coming up with this idea is I was, you know, thinking about it the other day, and, you know, I was like, I haven't dropped a bladder in like a year because, you know, I've been moved on to other steps, which is great because it's, you obviously want to advance and get better and better at things. But it was just like a step that I hadn't really thought about in a long time. And so when we were sitting down to kind of come up with a way to sort of formalize a curriculum is, well, what if we do a better job of tracking what steps we're doing in a case, how long it takes us, You know, that way we can see, are we getting faster at a step? Am I still really slow at this one step? When was the last time I did that step? And just having what we would call a passport or a book that's sort of documenting how long it took you to do a step and, you know, how many of those steps you were doing within a case, and develop a way to sort of more numerically look at how we're progressing and be able to have our attending sign off and say like, okay, you know, you did great on this step today. You did it in X amount of time. That's a huge improvement. Or these were some of the things I noticed that were slowing you down. Here's some economy of motion you can work on potentially. And just really engaging with our attending sort of at the beginning of the case to say, okay, you know, I sat down and I looked at my passport last night, and these are the things I'd really like to focus on today. Can we do that? And just having a plan moving forward. Because I think when you go into a case knowing what you're going to work on and what you want to practice, it allows you to better prepare for that. And it also allows the attending to be able to better organize how they want that case to go that day. And that way you can still be efficient in the OR. You're not taking 12 hours to do a case, but allow the resident to get the training they want and get your case done on time.
I love it. I think it's great. And I really look forward to, you know, implementing it here at UW. So I think that'll be great for the residents. You can kind of personalize their training. It'll get the attendings engaged in the process. It's not just we all show up and, you know, you sort of do what you feel like doing. It's more structured. So I think that'll be great, Jordan. Kudos. So are you ready for the joke of the month?
Yes, I'm so excited.
Okay. All right. Well, here it is. So what did the urologist say when they made a discovery?
What?
Urethra.
Did you come up with that yourself?
I may have. I don't know. I can't take credit, but that's the joke of the month. And it's pretty good. What do you think?
I like it.
Yeah, I saw you smiled.
As far as dad jokes go, it wasn't that bad. So I like it.
I got to keep it relatively clean. And I am a dad. So I do confess. I can tell that one to my daughters. I think they'll be good with it. Well, thanks so much, Dr. Krieger. This has been a lot of fun. I've thoroughly enjoyed having you on the program.
Thank you for having me. I hope I get famous from this.
It's possible. You never know. You're already famous in our eyes. You're almost done with your residency. Your picture will go up here on the wall and will remain on the wall forever. So, I just want to say thanks again and congratulate you for being almost done with residency. And we're coming to the end of our podcast, and just wanted to thank the Department of Urology, as well as Dr. Steven Nakata, our chairman. This has been just a lot of fun. So thanks again, Dr. Krieger, for being here to talk to us about innovative approaches to resident education. And hope you all have a good rest of your day.
Winnovations is a production from the Department of Urology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Thanks for listening.